Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Thursday, December 20th, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news, and we're going to get an answer to a question in Life Advice Corner with Chris Evangelista. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film writers Huitran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
The week is almost over. Christmas is almost here. But before we unpack the presents, let's get to the latest news. Let's start first with how many movies Netflix plans to release next year. Actually, before we talk about that, Chris, do we know how many movies Netflix has released this year?
It's about between like 70 or 80. So
wow, is that many original movies?
That's what they were aiming for. I don't have the specific number. I'd have to look into that.
Wow. So how many are they going to release next year?
They're aiming for 90 movies in 2019. And to give some perspective on that, most movie studios, like Universal Studios, who put out a lot of movies, only do about 30 movies a year. So 90 is a very big increase from that. And keep in mind, this is just movies. It's not factoring in all the other original stuff Netflix does, like TV shows and, you know, specials. Like, this is just movies only. So the total number of original Netflix stuff total is going to be even higher. So this is just the future. Netflix is going all out on this, and, you know, they can do what movie studios can't do because they approach things very differently. For one thing, they don't spend nearly as much money marketing their things as movie studios do. Like, movie studios have a huge marketing budget, and Netflix doesn't really do that. And I guess that saves them enough money that they can do this. And of course, they also like to forego releasing in theaters, which also saves money. So I mean, this really is just the future, whether anyone likes it or not. Netflix is slowly taking over.
This is crazy because, you know, I think I've already said on this podcast, I've seen 60 movies this year. That means that Netflix has released more movies than I've seen this year. That's insane.
Well, to be fair, not all of the Netflix movies are worth watching, so...
I'm sure a vast majority of them are not worth watching. But I mean, like, you know, I guess at this rate in 2020, they'll be up to like 120 or 130 movies a year. That's like almost three movies a week.
Oh, my God.
How many Netflix movies have you watched this year, HT?
Oh, I don't know. I've watched... Well, I can't count them. I don't really know which ones I've watched. I've definitely watched All the Boys I Loved Before multiple times. So,
speaking of which, good segue.
Yeah.
But they are making a sequel.
Yes. This is one Netflix movie that I'm looking forward to because All the Boys I Loved Before is getting a sequel, following up the summer smash hit that starred Lana Condor and Noah Centineo. So this was something that we reported on about a month ago, and that Netflix was developing a sequel, but now the streaming giant has announced officially that a sequel is moving forward with the original stars and with a new romantic rival who has yet been announced casting for the sequel. Although his character appeared briefly in the post-credits scene in To All the Boys I Loved Before, but the announcement video seems to suggest that they will be recasting this role for the sequel.
Interesting. Are you, I know you are a big fan of this movie, but are you excited for a sequel?
I am. I'm excited just to see the super charming Lana Condor, Noah Centineo back on screen, even if it means some troubles among their ways romantically. But I'm happy to see, you know, rom-coms back on the small screen, the big screen again, and how we need this kind of escapist fare in a world like this.
Chris, was one of the 200 plus movies you saw this year this movie?
No, I have yet to watch this, although I've heard it's charming. I just have not gotten around to watching it yet.
Well, now that's a franchise, You must see it. let's talk about another Netflix franchise. Let's talk about Black Mirror. There's some details that they're making a Black Mirror movie, and we kind of like are trying to piece together the details here. What is going on, Chris?
Yeah, this is a little convoluted. I tried to piece it together as much as I could. So back in April, word broke. Now, there were set photos that surfaced from a Black Mirror episode being shot. And the episode at the time was known as Bandersnatch. And we weren't sure if that was just a code title, a working title, or if that was a real thing. And then in October, another thing broke saying by the end of the year, Netflix planned to release Black Mirror Season 5, which would also include a Choose Your Own Adventure episode. That in November, Netflix on Twitter posted this basically breakdown of everything new coming to Netflix in December. And at the very end, it said Black Mirror Bandersnatch on 12/28. And then they deleted that because apparently they weren't supposed to let us know yet. So at the time, everyone was assuming that Bandersnatch was just an episode of Season 5, and Season 5 was going to drop on 12/28. But now, if you go to Netflix and you type in Bandersnatch, this little box comes up that says Black Mirror Bandersnatch, a Netflix film, which seems to suggest they've actually made a Black Mirror movie, and that's what Bandersnatch is. Now, it's still not clear if only the movie is coming on 12/28 or if the movie and Season 5 are both coming on 12/28. But as of now, on 12/28, something Black Mirror related is going to come to Netflix.
And Netflix in the past has done like didn't they do a holiday special at one point?
I don't think they did it themselves. I think that was when it was still on the BBC. That's when they did the holiday special for Black Mirror.
Okay, but so this is not that. This is seemingly a feature film, like right. A feature length production that is in the Black Mirror branding, I guess.
Yes.
So what do we know about this film?
Well, the set photos revealed that the set was designed to look like it was the 1980s. So it's safe to assume this is set in the 1980s. And of course, Black Mirror famously went to the 1980s in the episode San Junipero, which is, you know, the best Black Mirror episode. Yeah. Ever. And we also know that in the UK in 1984, there was a video game being developed called Bandersnatch, but it never came out. Basically, they ran out of funding and the game was abandoned. So whether or not this is going to tie directly into that because it's set in the 80s, or if they're just using that to start a different story, but that's all we know for now.
What do we know about that game? Like, what was that game going to be?
There's almost no info. Basically, it was one thing, and then when the money ran out, it got turned into something completely different. So I doubt the game itself is going to be the subject of the episode, but you never know.
Now, when we posted the story on SlashFilm.com, one of our listeners, readers, Honest Joe, responded, do we actually know that Bandersnatch was a real game that was being developed in the 1980s? Or is it possible that this is something they came up with for a backstory and have, you know, put out there onto the internet?
No. Bandersnatch really was a video game here. I just looked it up. So it became a game called Braticus. So this is it looks like it's a sci-fi game, and that was released in 1986. But it was originally supposed to be called Bandersnatch, which was developed by Imagine Software. And there was press releases. There were all these things that prove it really did exist. Unless Black Mirror marketing is so good, they went back in time and released all this stuff.
Hey, I wouldn't put it past them. So if you want to get ready for this Black Mirror episode, you know, fire up your old IBM whatever computer and try to find, what is it, Brad something?
Braticus, Braticas.
I doubt that game plays on any modern hardware of any kind.
Yes, probably not. I'm going to have a... I'm going to include a link. I'm going to send Peter an image, and we'll include that in the show news notes, which is the original ad for Bandersnatch.
Okay, cool. You know, speaking of video games, the Uncharted has been, they've been trying to make an Uncharted movie for, I think, as long as I've been writing about movies, which is over a decade. And most recently, Sean Levy, the producer of Stranger Things, has been attached to this. And it seems like he was not able to make it happen. HT, what is going on here?
Yeah, so Sony has been trying to make an Uncharted movie for nearly 10 years now. And Sean Levy, who was the fourth director to be attached to this project, is the latest to leave it. So he has vacated the position and will instead go on to direct a movie called Free Guy, starring Ryan Reynolds and Lil Rel. But meanwhile, Sony is on the hunt for yet another director to hopefully bring this video game adaptation to the big screen. Tom Holland, star of Spider-Man Homecoming, is still attached to play the young version of the video game protagonist, Nathan Drake. But that is the only name attached to it still. So Sean Levy was the fourth filmmaker attached to this after David O. Russell, who was attached back in 2010, Neil Berger, who came a few months later and lasted until 2014, and then Seth Gordon, who also left about around 2016.
You know, strangely, I think, you know, I don't play video games at all, but I think I'm the only one on this current episode of the podcast that has played an Uncharted video game. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Uncharted, I'm sure many listeners out there have played Uncharted, but it's kind of like Indiana Jones, but if, like, John McClane from Die Hard, like, he had the humor of John McClane from Die Hard. So, I don't know. It's pretty insane. Like, it's maybe, like, ratcheted up a little bit from what Indy encounters. I don't know how Tom Holland is going to play into this. I guess it's probably going to be a younger version of the character.
Yes, he's going to be a younger. I guess this will be, like, a prequel in a way.
Yeah. I don't know. There's yet to be a good video game movie. I am interested to see what this is, but with Spielberg making another Indiana Jones, I'm not sure if there's a need for this. Although, you know, if you could get an interesting director, if they could get another, like, David Gordon Green involved in this, you know, I'd be excited. So we'll have to see what comes of this. We've been talking on the podcast about Jordan Peele's next movie. And it called Us, and last week, or was it earlier this week? No, it was last week. It was definitely last week. We came across a plot synopsis on a test screening, giving us some information about this movie. And now Entertainment Weekly has given us a little bit of more information. Chris, what do we know?
So Entertainment Weekly dropped two intriguing photos from the film, and they also have an interview with Peele talking about it. He says, quote, "For my second feature, I wanted to create a monster mythology. I wanted to do something that was more firmly in the horror genre, but still held on to my love of movies that are twisted but fun." I'm sure everyone recalls that when Peele's last movie came out, Get Out came out, there was this weird argument where people were saying it's not really a horror movie, blah, 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 even though it clearly is a horror movie. But it looks like no matter what happens here, that argument's not going to happen, because it looks like he's going, like, unambiguously for horror with this movie. He also reveals that he made Lupita Nyong'o, who stars in the film, watch a series of horror films to get ready for the movie. And those films include Dead Again, The Shining, The Babadook, It Follows, A Tale of Two Sisters, The Birds, Funny Games, Martyrs, Let the Right One In, and The Sixth Sense. And that's a very eclectic group of films. I mean, Martyrs is like torture porn. Funny Games is a foreign film. You know, everyone knows what The Shining is. Dead Again is sort of this, like, mystery thriller. So it's hard to really glean what the movie's going to be from this list of films, but I'm very intrigued.
Well, that plot synopsis we got last week kind of painted the picture of almost a home invasion film, right?
Yeah, I mean, the plot involves a couple. They go to spend a weekend at their friend's beach house, and then something goes wrong. And one of these pictures has Lupita Nyong'o like going down a basement, and she's all disheveled, and that gives me a very that seems very much like Martyrs, because there's a whole thing in Martyrs where they find this hidden basement. So I'm really not sure what he's going for here, and I'm very excited to find out, because I loved Get Out, and I'm very excited that he's sticking with the horror genre. I hope he stays with that for a long time.
I'm really surprised there's going to be monsters involved here, because like if for some reason I was expecting this to be more of, you know, a grounded feature, but this is very intriguing. HG, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Not anything that you guys haven't said. I'm also intrigued. I don't really know what to make of this list. Maybe it's vampires, because that the right one in is in there. They count as monsters of some sort, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was something completely unexpected.
Entertainment Weekly, which broke these photos, also on the cover story, they had the first images, I guess. Maybe not the first images, because there was a teaser trailer, but the first images outside of the teaser trailer from the film. First images showing Will Smith in costume as the genie. And HG, you did a whole write-up kind of rounding up what we learned about Aladdin from these images in the story. What do we know?
Well, for one, Will Smith isn't blue in these pictures, which has already started a little bit of a hoopla around this. Although he later on came out and said that the genie will be blue. And we learned from this EW cover story that the effects are not quite finished yet for his take on genie. But this whole new world of images depicts our first look at Will Smith's genie, as well as our first look at Jafar, who's played by Marwan Kenzari, also a new character played by Nassim Pedrad, who plays Jasmine's handmaiden. We also got a first look of Abu, too, wearing his signature vest. These images give us a clear idea of Guy Ritchie's vision of Aladdin, which looks to be a little bit more diverse than the Disney animated film. It will have people of all backgrounds, Southeast Asian, Asian, Arabic, and populating the fictional country of Agrabah. And we also learned a little bit more about Will Smith's take on the genie, which Richie's description is kind of funny. He says in the EW story, quote, "I wanted a muscular 1970s dad." And he added, "He was big enough to feel like a force, not so muscular that he looked like he was counting his calories, but formidable enough to look like you knew he was in the room." And then Will Smith went on to describe having a sort of hip-hop flavor in the role. So I'm not really sure how his genie will turn out, but
this sounds like nothing I want.
Also, he has a top knot. Well, a top knot like braid. Yeah. So
now I know when this story broke, you were a little you expressed in the Slack channel some cynicism over some comments from Guy Ritchie and his approach to this whole thing. Can you talk about that?
Well, Aladdin is an important sort of cultural milestone in a way, because it's Disney depicting like these people of color in the main lead roles in a very rare like occasion. And yet Ritchie seems to be indicating that he will not really be focusing on the Middle Eastern culture about it, but he calls it principally a human challenge rather than an ethnic one, and then goes on to talk about how he approaches it from a human standpoint, etc., despite having what he called an army of cultural advisors on set. So it just seems to me that, like, this is just my opinion, it feels like he's kind of downplaying the cultural importance of this story. And, you know, it's like the sort of all humans matter kind of thing that is a way that to me feels like it's downplaying the racial aspect, which is just as important as the universal story, because it plays such a central part in this story.
I feel like they have to get it right. I feel like if they have a group of advisors on set with him, and like, you know, this is the same company. I they got Moana right. You know, they've done a good job in recent years, like, kind of nailing this kind of thing. That said, you know, I'm not sure how much faith I have in Guy Ritchie. Chris, do you have any thoughts on this?
The images I've learned from, you know, doing this for a while that you shouldn't judge things by their Entertainment Weekly images because Entertainment Weekly, especially their covers, tend to be really bad. And then the films themselves end up looking fine. So I don't want to judge.
Except for Terminator Genesis.
Yes, that was the only time where it turned out to actually be worse than the photos. But I don't want to judge this too much. I do think it's weird that, like, Will Smith's blueness is going to be, I guess, CGI. Like, couldn't they just put makeup on him? It just seems like a waste of money to be like, we have to do this with CGI. Like, just put makeup on it. It just seems like a lot less hassle to me, but what do I know? But
I'm guessing it's twofold. I'm guessing, number one, Will Smith doesn't want to spend, you know, 3 hours in the makeup chair every day.
Getting covered in blue makeup. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
At the beginning and end. And also, this gives them wiggle room to play with how blue they want him in post. You know what I mean? Like, once they track it, if you know how, you know, the computer tracking works and stuff,
right,
they can basically adjust that hue in any way after they have that data in. But that's a lot of data. They need a lot of manpower to put the track. They got to go through every frame and track him. Yeah, it's crazy.
I also feel like they've, like, shot themselves in the foot with this because, like, I feel like they should have just kept Will Smith's, you know, appearance a secret, because now we've all seen him like he looks like now. And I don't know about everyone else, but I know, you know, from now on, every time I picture this movie, I'm going to picture that, you know, EW cover where he just looks like Will Smith dresses the genie and not, you know, like he's going to look in the movie, and it's going to distract me forever. But that's me.
Now, I know, like,
you know what he looks like? He looks like that Imagine Sinbad genie movie.
Oh,
Kazam!
Yeah. Kazam, yeah. Shazam is the real one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like studios still value the, you know, being present on the cover of a magazine, even though I don't know anybody that actually reads the magazine. They read the website. And I feel like if I was in studio publicity and marketing, I would be like, let's forget being on the cover of Entertainment Weekly, because every single cover looks bad. Like, it just, like why, you know, I would only give them, like, shots that came directly from the movie or from the set photographers. I would not trust Entertainment Weekly's photographers because they're horrible. And I feel like that can only hurt the film. I don't know. Maybe there is wide exposure of Entertainment Weekly. I'm sure it's at every grocery store. And even though people don't buy it, you know, millions of people walk by it and see it. I don't know. Chris, what do you think?
I mean, they've got to still have some circulation if they're still going. So, you know, in an era when so many print mags shut down. But yeah, I agree on the sense that, you know, if I were working on a film, I would insist that if they're putting something from my film on the cover, it would have to be something like I approved, or, you know, just because I don't know why, I don't know what is wrong with their cover photographers, but they without fail, I don't think I've ever seen an Entertainment Weekly cover where I've been like, oh man, that looks cool. Just without fail, it always looks awful. And then the film usually looks fine, but I don't know if it's the lighting or how they, you know, render it. I don't know what they're doing over there, but I wish they would get it right.
Okay, let's move to our last story before we get to Advice Corner. And that is, we've been talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 3 since James Gunn was taking off that project. We've been talking about who could take the reins. We've had some speculation in that area. And now we know another name that apparently met to possibly direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Chris, tell us about it.
So Adam McKay, who, of course, directed Anchorman and The Big Short and this year's Vice, revealed recently on a podcast that he was approached by Marvel to take over Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. You know, obviously he's not doing it, or else that would be the headline, but he was asked to do it. And he also revealed that at one point, when Inhumans was still going to be a movie before they decided to turn it into a TV show that everyone forgot. He was going to direct that too, or at least he was asked to direct that. So, I mean, he has a history with Marvel. He wrote Ant-Man, or, you know, he did some work on the screenplay for Ant-Man. So he's got a history with them. And he says in this interview that he's always talking with them about projects. So he might do something else down the line, but now we know at least he was one of the people Marvel approached to take over Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm curious what you guys think, because I feel like involving Adam, a filmmaker like Adam McKay, feels very almost like when they hired Peyton Reed to direct Ant-Man. And I guess that turned out fine, right? It wasn't a bad movie, and I like Ant-Man, and I like Ant-Man and the Wasp. But he just doesn't seem to fit the Marvel playbook. Chris, would you be excited for an Adam McKay Marvel movie?
I don't know, because, you know, obviously he has a background in comedy, and I do think he's an interesting director. I like The Big Short. I'm one of the few people who really liked Vice, but his style is so different from James Gunn's. I mean, I feel like anyone who takes this over has an uphill battle, but his style in particular is worlds removed from James Gunn and Gunn's style of making movies, and I just feel like it would be really glaring. It would really stick out. He would have to basically just change the way he makes movies to make this. And at that point, like, what's even the point of hiring him?
Yeah, I feel like McKay's style is more sitcom-y. I don't want to, like, it feels like I'm insulting Adam McKay. I like Adam McKay's stuff, but it doesn't feel as stylish and as fresh as, you know, the Guardians movies from James Gunn. HT, do you have any thoughts?
No, I agree with you, because I think that with McKay with Marvel eyeing Adam McKay, it feels like they're trying to go for a comedy first approach, but then ignoring like the style that James Gunn brought to the Guardians movies. So I don't think he would be able to hold up that end of the films. So I don't really know, because like his style is a little more broad, I would say, than what we see in Guardians.
Yeah, this worries me some. I really hope. My theory, you know, I've expressed this on the podcast in the past. My theory is they should just have Taika Waititi do it, and it be a Thor Guardians movie. And I feel like that would get you out of, you know, it could be Thor 4/Guardians 3. I don't know. Not sure what you'd call it, I guess. Whatever. I don't know.
Guardians of the Ragnarok.
As Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Thorniverse.
What was that? Guardians of what?
Guardians of the Thorniverse. I don't know. That was terrible.
I don't know. But okay. We should probably end this here and move on to Advice Corner with Chris Evangelista.
It's Chris's Advice Corner.
Okay, in today's edition, Aaron from Kentucky writes in that one of the worst people to encounter when going to the theater is someone who can't put their cell phone away or is texting throughout the movie, which can really ruin the experience. What is the proper way to address such a situation? Would you tell a theater attendant that someone is disturbing you or ask the person to stop texting? So, Chris, what is the answer to this guy's question? Like, how do you address the situation?
So, you know, if it's at the point where it's so distracting you can't deal with it, I would probably get a theater attendant, because I am a coward and I don't want to confront people. Also, people are crazy.
And this is why you watch movies at home.
Yes. But
you're such a coward that you don't even want to go to the theater.
But no, people are nuts. Like, you know, I've been in theaters where I haven't done it, but like someone else has tried to, you know, shush someone or say, even like in a very polite way, could you please put your phone away? And people react like you've just like offended them. They're like, I'm not putting my phone. Like, they act like, you know, you're the one who's wrong. And then you're just creating a scene in the theater and it gets even worse. You know, people are nuts. Like, I would, you know, here's what I would do. I would either, one, look to see if there's an empty seat somewhere else and move, or two, ask, you know, someone at, who works at the theater to do something, because, you know, you don't want to risk dealing with getting into a fight with some crazy person who's going to take it very seriously. And, you know, realistically, 9 times out of 10, I'm sure someone would be reasonable and be like, oh shit, and put their phone away. But I don't want to risk that. People are nuts. People are crazy. People are dangerous. Leave me alone.
I feel like I'm also a coward, but I will do the shh, because you can do that really quick and people won't know where exactly it came from. They know kind of the direction, but then you can act like, oh, I didn't do it. I didn't do the shh.
Can you do that with your phone? I mean, I guess you could do that by like just yelling, put your phone away, and hope they don't realize it's you doing it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have an example. This wasn't a phone specifically, but one time I went to see the they re-released Blade Runner, the first one, and I went to see that in theaters. And there was this guy sitting in front of me, and he was literally – he had seen the movie so many times that he knew it by heart, and he was quoting every single line in the movie, and he was doing it really loudly. He was like talking to the screen. And I leaned forward and I was like, sir, can you keep it down? And he went nuts. He was like, if you don't like it, why don't you leave? So I literally had to go out and I got like an usher. And I was like, can you please get this guy to shut the hell up because he is insane? And the usher came in and was like, sir, please keep it down. And from then on, he was quiet, but he flipped out at me. And I asked him very nicely. I was like, sir, please. And he lost his mind. So, you know, ever since then, I've tried to avoid like interacting with anyone at a theater because I don't want to deal with that.
HT, how do you deal with the situation?
Also being a non-confrontational coward, I just mostly glare at them and hope that they're telepathic in some way. Or I probably wouldn't go out of my way to talk to an usher though, because that's just like too much movement for me. But
that would mean that I would have to miss some of the movie.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen. I'd rather just like maybe tap them on the shoulder and ask them nicely. I have not had the experience of crazy people like Chris, so maybe that's why I'm a little bit more inclined to do that. And also, like, people won't yell at me because I'm a small Asian girl unless they're like evil. So I don't know, that's usually the course of action I would do.
That's hilarious. You know, I live in L.A., and I will say the industry crowds are the worst. Maybe not at public screenings, but when you go to maybe not necessarily press screenings, but like when I'm at Sundance, you see this happening where there's like people in the industry that you can tell are not press, but they're like somehow in the industry. You know, these are people that get screeners of movies, they get, you know, screenings at, you know, CAA and whatever, and they'll be on their phone the entire movie, like checking their Facebook, just refreshing it and stuff like that. And it's like the worst kind of people, because they feel like, I think they're so used to being able to see like new things in a way that they're able to like sit in a small screening room by themselves and you know, have their phone open, that they don't realize how uncourteous it is. So I've seen this happen at like Sundance or a TIFF in the industry screenings. I feel like living in a big city, and I'm wondering what your experience with this is, HTE, because you've just moved to New York.
Yes.
That you kind of get away from a lot of the... Okay, last week I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We were at Disneyland and we went to a small theater or a big theater in Orange County. And this is like in like, you know, the suburbs. And it's been a while since I've seen a movie kind of in a suburban mall. And this was us seeing a movie at like 9 p.m. and there was babies crying during the movie, kids talking. And I feel like being in L.A. and seeing movies at like theaters that cost probably, you know, the ticket prices a few dollars more. And, you know, people generally don't have, you know, there aren't as many families at like, you know, nighttime screenings here. You don't generally get that kind of stuff. You might get the guy on his phone, you know, checking his Facebook or something like that. But you don't generally get the kind of stuff you get at a suburban theater. And maybe that's me. I don't know. Maybe that is a broad judgment of two different types of audiences. But I've noticed that. So, HJ, I'm wondering what your experience has been thus far in Manhattan.
Manhattan has been good, actually. Like, there have been, I've gone to, most of the screenings I've gone to are, like, either smaller screening rooms or something, but I have gone to see movies at, like, the AMC in Times Square. And while that crowd generally tends to be, like, kind of rowdy, I went to see Suspiria there, and I was surprised to see, like, the entire crowd was, like, wrapped attention at the screen. I expected to, like, have to see some people leave, but they were a pretty good audience, and I haven't had, like, bad audience experiences so far, even with big movies or big theaters like that. Aquaman, I saw at that theater, and, like, it was mostly, like, fans who were there and who were very excited. Bumblebee 2 was, like, a big theater crowd who were just, like, all Transformers fans and were excitedly giggling and whispering at, like, you know, the Autobots who showed up, but it wasn't any way that, like, that distracted me. Although there was one guy who was just, like, very excitedly explaining to his friend everything that was happening. So I was just like, but I kind of just let that be. I think I'm a little bit more tolerant of theater going crowds than Chris is. I kind of just, I can zone them out for the most part. But I will say I have noticed this similar things with suburban theaters, actually, because when I was in DC, I was in, like, Northern Virginia and would go to theaters that are more in the suburbs. And while some theaters I went to were, like, art house theaters that mostly had older crowds, there were a few at, like, the mall that were just, like, very disrespectful of the movie. Or at one point, I think I went to see The Little Stranger in Tyson's at the mall theater. And this, like, group of teenagers walked in and then, like, asked me what the movie was and stayed for 20 minutes before leaving. And I was like, okay, why did you come in then? Huh. Yeah, it was very strange. So I do think that there is that sort of divide. I expected, actually, for the New York and city crowd to be a bit more disrespectful, but I found to be somewhat of the opposite. It does depend on, like, the kind of theater you're at, though. Yeah.
Chris, what have you noticed in your, like, local theaters? Like, how does that compare?
It really depends. Like, I go out of my way to go to as many underpopulated screenings as I can. I mean, if I'm going to a press screening, I can't help who's there. But if I go to, like, a regular movie, I try to go, like, very early in the morning because I know it's not going to be crowded. But yeah, I do find that suburban theaters where it's, like, you know, bored teens just waiting to kill time, like, they don't give a shit about, like, anyone or anything. So, you know, they're just there because they have nowhere else to go, and they, you know, they don't want to go home to their mom's house. So we, you know, I do find that happening a lot.
In my screening of Spider-Verse, there was, like, kids taking photos of the screen with the camera during the movie, and it, I don't know, it was just a mess.
You should have read those kids out. They're committing a felony, Peter. You're not above it.
My question is, would you guys ever call the cops on a loud or a theater goer or someone on their phone?
No, I would not go that far.
I think you're referencing a journalist named Alex Billington, who a few years ago at the Toronto International Film Festival called 911 because someone, it was one of those industry people that I'm talking about in an industry screening, would not, kept on taking photos of the screen or something, or was on their phone or something. Chris, have you noticed that? Because you go to a lot of film festivals. Have you noticed that industry people are?
I do notice, like, if you go to a very early morning press and industry screening, there are a lot of people who, like, they seem like they're, like, publicists who actually don't give a shit about them. I don't know why they're there, but they're just there, like, checking their phones. Like, one time I was at a screening at TIFF, and this woman sat next to me, and she was, like, literally doing work on her laptop the entire movie. And it's like, I don't know why you're in this theater doing that, but yeah, I have noticed that.
I wish I had an Alamo Draft House near me. I know, Chris, you don't have one near you, right?
No.
And HG, you finally have one that's somewhat close. Brooklyn?
I do. Yeah, the Brooklyn one. I went to see The Favorite there, and they had The Favorite themed menu, so I was very excited to go see the movie there. It was some sort of pineapple cocktail. And then some really rich, like, strawberry smoothie of a sort. It was delicious. And it was good. I was kind of, it was interesting to have that experience because, you know, you're have a menu and you have people serving you, but it was pretty non-disruptive. And I mean, they have it, they have a well-oiled machine there, and it's really cool. You don't have to, if you get hungry, you don't have to like go outside and get a snack.
Well, the thing I love is that whole no talking, no on your phone policy that they have, because you can be the coward. Like all of us are, you just got to write like on the piece of paper, and like your waiter see, you know, looks every like, you know, 10, 15 minutes to see if there's a new paper, like in, you place it like in front of your, where you're seating, and they come and grab it. And you could write like, you know, the guy behind me keeps on talking, and like they'll monitor the situation and take care of it for you. So it's like, it's almost, I guess they're your silent bodyguard, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know why. Whenever there are really strict rules like that, I get paranoid that I'll be the one who accidentally talks or gets on my phone, even though I know I don't do that kind of thing. But I'm like, oh my God, am I going to get kicked out and never able to return?
See, the one thing I do, and I hope it doesn't annoy anybody, but I have my Apple Watch is still on, but it's under my sleeve, so it doesn't light up and like interrupt other people. I don't think anybody can see it. Or I'm 99% sure no one can see it. But if I get a phone call, which has a different vibration than like a text message or than like an email or something, if I get a phone call or text message, I will look under my sleeve. But I don't think anybody can see it because I'm like, what, like it's like so point of view. Does that make sense? Of like me having my hand and it's covered. I don't know. But yeah, I'm always worried. Like I don't want to interrupt the movie for other people. I feel like, I don't know, people are just assholes. Like I'm so, like when the chance is that I have to look at my watch or whatever, I feel like I'm so courteous about it. Like I'm like blocking it. I'm like, do you know what I mean? Like I'm, but some people just don't care. Like,
yeah, it's terrible. People suck. I've been
these
saying
are the ones going to hell.
I've been saying this for a full year and everyone says I'm negative, but no, I'm right. I'm correct.
How can we fix this, Chris?
All movies should go straight to my house so I don't have to leave.
That means we'll all have movie screenings at your place.
Oh, no, I didn't mean worse. I don't mean only my house.
That is Chris's worst nightmare.
Oh, you can only watch them at my house. No.
At Chris's house.
Okay, so I think that brings us to the end of today's /Film Daily. Chris, where can people find more of your work online?
I am always at slashfilm.com and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
HT, where can we find you?
I am also at slashfilm.com and I'm on Twitter at htranbui.
You can find me at slashfilm on all social media. You can find all the stories we talked about in today's podcast in the show notes and linked on slashfilm.com. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, or if you need life advice from Chris, and please send Chris some questions. They don't always have to do with movies or TV shows. Like it could have to do with like your relationship. I think Chris wants to answer them all, right?
Yes. I'm just picturing me giving relationship advice and that's going to be very funny. So please write in your relationship advice.
So you can send that to peter@slashfilm.com. That's peter@slashfilm.com and leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention the email on the air. And please go to our iTunes page, write us like, you know, a few sentences, a 5-star review, tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you tomorrow. So movie party at Chris's place.
Yeah. It'll be like the scene from Mother where he's just stressing out about the sink.
Walls are just falling down and all right. I'll get the chairs ready.
Wait, so if we're watching a movie at Chris's place and Chris is on his phone, what do we do, Chris?
We can kick him out of his own house and just take over from there.
What makes you think I would go on my phone? I take watching movies at home very seriously. I don't check my phone.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.